showing a sign reading, quote, "Own the school year like a hero." The sign was affixed atop a gun case in a Walmart store. More news, more analysis. Get them both at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Good, honest, reliable. More than two decades ago, an auto repair shop opened in Reading based on those simple principles. Advanced Automotive is still family-owned, continuing on with those same ideals. So simple, yet rare in today's world. Modern cars and light trucks have grown more complex in the past 20-plus years, but those founding concepts still hold just as much importance when it comes to safety, reliability, and value for your dollar. Advanced Automotive of Reading promises that your vehicle will be serviced confidently by a technician with the training and knowledge to make professional repairs. Read what your friends and neighbors have to say about Advanced Automotive by going to RepairPal.com, where you can get an instant estimate of what you can expect to pay for your service or repair. Honest work at a fair price. It's not all that complicated. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 244-4423, or stop by 5756 F West Side Road.
Well, hello once again. Boomer Tech Radio is the name of the show. I'm Bob Belongi.
I'm Brenda Belongi.
And I'm Alan Belongi.
We are back in the KCNR studios with goodies, gadgets, gizmos, and tech news that you can use, brought to you each and every week here in Redding, California, by Advanced Automotive of Redding. And we are spread throughout the known cosmos via Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, whatever your podcast preference is, so you can take us on the road. We encourage you to do that. Download it. Make the little numbers go up, and that makes me smile. Brenda's always laughing at me because I'm every time there's any noticeable increment in the number of downloads.
Ooh, we got 5 downloads in the last 2 weeks. Woo-hoo. Actually, it's not that bad. It's better than that.
It's a little better than that. We do appreciate it. Anyway, this is a different, for those of you finding us for the first time, different sort of tech show. We are multi-generational. We are husband-wife. We don't bury you in a lot of jargon. Leo Laporte, I'm not. Although Leo does a great job of explaining.
Yeah. He doesn't do a lot of jargon either.
Yeah.
Or so, he does, he explains what it is.
We try not to geek out too much. Now, we may throw out occasional buzzwords because those are commonly used in the industry. And we don't try to dumb the stuff down because that just makes it even more confusing. If you ever tried to explain some piece of tech, well, of course, to your mom or something, and you start getting that look.
Oh, my mother is clueless.
Yeah.
You don't have to get very far into a conversation of that, quote unquote, with using words that everybody knows.
Yeah. It happens really quick when I talk about video games.
Well, there you'd lose me too, probably, yeah, but that's another story.
So we're told, leading off the show here, we are told that the next big thing, it used to be in the early days of the computer era, everybody had to know keyboard skills, right? You know, you had to learn how to type in order to operate, be able to run it and run a system. And you have to be able, of course, to know the rudiments of operating a keyboard, mouse, and now touchscreen.
That voice command is starting to overshadow that.
But in the background, underneath all of this is, of course, the code that makes everything run. Makes your games run. It makes your apps run. It's all those the little bits and pieces of numbers and letters and combinations like that that ultimately turn into ones and zeros to make the magic happen.
It's the instructions to tell your computer what to do,
right,
essentially.
So about this time last year, the huge, huge hype was, of course, coding camps. And the claim was that you could go into one of these things, take an 8 to 12 week course, come out of there ready to step into a $50,000 a year job, right?
That
was the claim.
So.
Not so fast. The trouble is, now we have so many coding camps turning out so many hopeful coders, and there aren't really that many paying jobs open for these hopeful candidates, which, what does that do to the wage structure? Well, you got a lot of people with the same skills vying for the same job.
It pushes it's the whole thing about supply and demand. If you have too much supply, the demand goes down.
It's become digital burger flipping.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, in fact, a story elsewhere in the program about a Google engineer who said that, you know, the wages and conditions, it was almost like a forced labor camp because the push on.
To produce, one.
Yeah.
And two, if you left, there were 45 people right behind you ready to step in that slot.
So they could pay you. You could spend, a couple of years of your life getting really good at this and make, you know, the guy up the street who will probably lose his job soon to a robot that you just coded, you're making the same as him.
And the robot that you just coded is going to write the next code.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's happening too. Anyway, several of these boot camps have closed down. At least 8 major schools shut down during 2017. 2 of them in San Francisco and in Greenville, South Carolina, are being shut down by their corporate parents. General Assembly in New York has some more venture capital, but they're shifting their focus from coding to corporate training. So there were nearly 100 academies in the U.S. and Canada, and that number doubled within a 3-year span. So it's going to shake out. Everybody wanted to get into this very lucrative field, and because, we don't have enough coders, well, now we're up to our neck in coders.
Yep. Kind of the thing in general with white collar work,
and a lot of this stuff, as you said, we're writing code that can write code. We say we want an application that will do this, and the AI says, "Okay, well, we'll and it'll write custom code on the spot."
Mm-hmm.
So there is, but again, we aren't going to everybody be standing on a corner with our hands in our pockets because people learn to adapt. In the first industrial revolution, it was everybody was going to starve because the machines on the line were taking away all the grunt labor jobs. Well, guess what? People learn skills, how to work on assembly lines and things like that. This is not that much different. There are things that people will be able to do that a machine will never be able to do adequately.
So, as long as we don't make the cost of labor too high.
one would think that I guess I remain optimistic that human beings have uniqueness that just can't be replicated that way.
Right. It'll be a long you can look at all, and the thing is, Hollywood has so much fun with this. But for all of Hollywood's efforts, to our knowledge, there does not exist in this world a self-aware system, and it's likely to be a very long time before one does exist. Would you guys agree with that?
If ever.
Yeah. Well, probably not in my lifetime.
Yeah.
But
so
I won't say, there's tiny chance.
We still tend to anthropomorphize. Did I get that right?
Hey,
anthropomorphize.
Yeah. All it needs is lightning to hit it. And number 5 is alive.
Yeah, and I've heard
input, Stephanie.
But I've heard Brenda yelling at her computer as though it were, in fact, a sentient being.
Oh, it has nothing to do with that. It's called pressure release. It's it's called, de-stressing. Of course it can't hear me, but I can still be mad at it.
It makes you feel better.
It makes me feel better.
Well, I talk to my car, too.
When you yell at your computer for being dumb or doing something stupid or whatever, it's
usually operator error.
It can't be dumb because it's not
smart in the first place.
It's just doing what it's been told to do.
It doesn't get angry. It doesn't get sad. It only runs programs. Yeah. If they did have feelings, we'd be in big trouble. Hey, according to an article in the New York Times, and this is causing some ripples through the industry, right now Netflix is the distributor for Disney's vast array of properties. If you a Marvel movie, they have a deal with Netflix. Star Wars stuff, they have a deal with Netflix. Because so many people are cord cutting and getting and doing their streaming, Disney is seeing their revenues start to drop dramatically. So under pressure from stockholders, they intend to launch 2 streaming services of their own and phase out their ties with Netflix. So here's another service you got to buy if you want those movies.
Bye-bye, Disney.
You'd think it'd be more worthwhile for them to negotiate some sort of better deal with Netflix rather than start up a whole new initiative, which...
Not to mention the fact you have to maintain the supply, the servers, the whatever. I mean, they can have somebody do
they're
that.
Making
they can
the
pay
investment.
For that. But.
The two unnamed streaming services, one will be built around ESPN, which Disney owns. The other is going to be Disney and Pixar movies and television shows, and it is all being powered rather than through Amazon Cloud or one of those services. It's going to be BAMTech. It's a technology that handles direct-to-consumer video for baseball teams and HBO, among others. Disney paid $1 billion for a third stake in BAMTech. Disney announced that they are accelerating their spending, and they... will be, and this is going to be a blow to Netflix, just like losing the entire Starz catalog hit Netflix pretty hard. Now, they're creating a lot of their own content, and they were partnering with Disney to create original programming. Now, it's not going to be overnight. It's going to take, I think, 2019 is the date when a lot of these things grandfather or, phase out.
It's still, I mean, I'm sure they've done their homework and research and whatever, but it definitely feels like they might misread the market a little bit. It's going to be not too long before people get sick of all the different things they quote-unquote need to subscribe to in order to keep up with everything.
Well, on aggregate, if you add it up, it's going to look no different in that aggregate than paying for cable or satellite over time.
Well, unless they're all $20 a pop, then it's going to be an issue.
That's what I'm saying.
Now, we're talking about the mighty empire, of course, but look at the what I feel was a deadly mistake that CBS made with the new Star Trek show. I haven't seen but about two frames of previews of the new Star Trek show. I know nothing about it.
I haven't heard any hype either.
Yeah, it was supposed to be the backbone of this new CBS on-demand service. I haven't seen anything. And they're holding it very close, trying to force people to get CBS on-demand.
Yeah, I know it exists, and that's about it. I mean, that's pretty bad marketing.
I think I've seen one or two teasers. They're not promoting
They're not promoting it, and they don't have a lot of, there's not a lot of buzz online or on social media either. And so are you supposed to be really curious and dying to know about it? It's like, failure.
Yeah, even some pretty hardcore Trekkies are going, there's a new series?
Well, Bob, when you and I talked about this before, our instant reaction was, I don't think so.
Yeah, that is not, it'll never work.
Well, I mean, you know, people will go and watch it, but who knows if it's going to actually, like, promote CBS in any way.
Yeah. I think that being able to, and of course, they're going to want their $20 a month as a minimum, most likely. And people are going to just say, no, that's enough is enough, you know. I think they'd be smarter to team up with Amazon and distribute their content and let Amazon be the network rather than
Amazon
trying to launch their own network.
Or Netflix or something that's already existed that people use already. I mean, the whole point of partnering up with Netflix would be to get more people to join Netflix from Netflix's point of view, right? That'd be the thing that Netflix wants out of it.
Netflix is an established conduit.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because, I mean, I don't plan on ever, like, canceling my Netflix account unless I really just run out of things because it's, you know, a drop in the bucket and even if I don't use it very often. So the amount more that gets added to it, it doesn't really matter to me, which is, I mean, it matters to me, but it's not really going to affect whether or not I'm going to pay for it or not, you know?
I think that, of course, we haven't heard too much about exclusive content on YouTube Red. I don't think I have absolutely no interest.
YouTube Red.
I have absolutely no interest in YouTube Red.
Nobody does.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a massive blunder.
The only thing anybody ever pays money for Netflix or for YouTube is to get rid of ads. But even then, there are ways around ads anyway.
Yeah. So I think that is going to be a fail. While we're picking on Disney, how about this one? According to an article in the Inquisitor, Disney is being sued, alleging several of their smartphone apps are illegally tracking and spying on children. Now, Brenda, you talked about this last week.
Right, with the FBI had the story that I got, or, you know, the message that these connected toys that kids like to have may not be so protecting or the personal information that you enter in order to, you know, use the device or what have you, that's maybe not so secure.
Yeah.
And it could be very invasive, and it could be sold, and it could be all kinds of things. So one has to be really careful about doing that sort of thing. This is the same kind of thing.
Yeah. The lawsuit charges that Disney is violating the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, or COPPA, which is regulated by the Federal Trade Commission. This privacy law was created in 1998 and then ratified by Congress. The lawsuit charges that the entertainment giant's approved apps contain tracking technology. As a consequence, Disney has the ability to collect personal information from a user, such as their geographic location and internet browsing history. In turn, that information is often sold to third-party entities for use in ad targeting.
Right.
Well, that's true for anything they gather.
Right. But you know,
when
kids,
you start doing this to kids.
Minors, yeah, that's people get a little upset about
that. That kind of raises a stink. So the plaintiff and Amanda Rushing of California sued Disney on August the 3rd in San Francisco federal court. She is alleging breaches of privacy, and Disney and its affiliates have failed to obtain proper legal consent before they use the apps to target children for personalized advertising. Okay, and I see her point, but how is this different from the toy cartoons that appear on what used to be Saturday morning TV, but is now the network TV, pushing the kids to they have to buy this or that thing?
Or save up 10 bubblegum wrappers and send it in and get such and so. In a way, that's just a different twist on that.
Disney is saying it's just a misunderstanding, and they look forward to having their day in court. And, of course, they probably have bigger and badder lawyers.
Quite.
The apps include Avengers Net, Beauty and the Beast, Perfect Match, Cars Lightning League, Club Penguin Island, and quite a few others. It's a big, long list of apps. Zootopia, Crime Files.
About 42 of them.
Yeah. So we will see how Disney fares in court, because if this was in Europe, they'd be toast. You know, if this lawsuit, because Europeans, you know, dislike American companies, and they love to swing the privacy hammer.
I heard, I didn't read it in this, but I'd heard that this was turning into a class action lawsuit. Yeah, this is a class action lawsuit. So, unfortunately, anybody that actually participates in it might get, you know,
$3
out of it, and all the lawyers get rich. So, you know.
Did you rush to file your claim for your optical drive class action lawsuit reward?
Yeah,
35
sure
cents?
I did.
Yeah. You know, well, they've set aside $1 billion. Well, that's going to go pretty fast. And I looked at the stuff and I said, you know, I don't have the original. I don't have the receipts for a Dell I bought in 2001.
I think at one point I qualified for $3 from something from Walmart for something that didn't affect me because I worked during that time period.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would have gotten like $3. So it's like
a bunch of lawyers pocketed a pile of money, though.
Right. So the whole, whenever it turns into a class action lawsuit, it rarely ever benefits the consumer. I mean, if you want to look at it as punishment for the company being sued, go ahead. But it's not really benefiting everybody.
Yeah, it's
apart
being touted
from the,
by the lawyers as cash in.
Well,
right, but it's not.
No, and you get so little usually compared to what you've spent a lot of times. And the company writes it off as a loss or some kind of tax advantage. I have very little doubt.
Yeah.
Or makes like up, jacks up prices so future consumers pay for it anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Corporate lawyers make a pile of money. The suing lawyers make a pile of money. And maybe Amanda, what's her name, will make some money. We mentioned Amazon, and Alan, Amazon has come up with yet another delivery method that raises some eyebrows.
Hey, if they want to get drones to you, then rather than having a whole bunch of warehouses everywhere, why not just bring the delivery mechanisms closer to you via trains, vans, and boats? How's that sound?
So, this is an interesting article. It's on ReadWrite. Amazon's engineers said that they could use specially designed train cars to go to they would load up these products, go to a region, and then launch the fleet of drones.
Okay, how could this possibly go wrong?
Well, the interesting part is that the drones would actually be able to function while whatever the vehicles are in motion. So it'd essentially be a mobile drone port with all of the packages the drones are going to deliver riding along with it. And then once it gets close enough, the drone will grab whatever package it needs to deliver to the consumer, fly off, drop it off, and then fly back, knowing where the van or train or wherever is, and then land to refill or recharge and pick up its next package whenever it gets by somebody else. So it'll be this essentially, a mobile warehouse for all these drones. It definitely could save them a lot of money because they won't have to pay, to have warehouses all over the place, and it would allow them to do a lot more faster deliveries at a lot lower cost.
Yeah. So we have these clouds of drones benignly delivering packages to eager waiting consumers who can't wait the extra 24 hours for the UPS or FedEx guy or who you have to pay and have sick leave for and put fuel in the truck, etc. No, we want it now. We want it within, I want to hit the return key and the package is on my door.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, if we have clouds of drones in the skies, what's the next logical step, Skynet? Let's put guns on them.
Well, of course.
That's
right. Sooner or later, somebody was going to do that.
Yes. Article here in Alphr, A-L-P-H-R. By the way, a lot of our stories are picked from the Flipboard application, the technology. We have Boomer Tech Radio is one of the magazines in Flipboard. According to this article, an American military drone company has developed a gun-wielding drone. This is not a YouTube thing. This is a real, honest-to-goodness project. You knew this was coming up. A drone equipped with an assault rifle. They've even made a photoshopped image of what said drone would look like in combat against insurgents. The T1 or TICAT or
the
T1
T100,
T1000. Yes,
what?
T1,
I'm trying to figure out if that's T1KAD or TICAT. I think it's TICAD.
It's some kind of acronym,
yeah.
Because it's TICAD.
Yeah. Duke Robotics says this is the soldier of the future, a tool that means there's no need for soldiers to enter into hot conflict zones to take out their appointments.
Opponents.
Yeah. Anybody see Terminator Rise of the Machines? Hunter Killers.
I could see applications for vermin hunting if you have coyotes on ranches and things like that are causing problems, or feral pigs, that kind of thing, although feral pigs very quickly figure out what one sounds like.
This is not science fiction. This thing is in the pipe. The TICAD weighs 50 kilograms, so it's a little over 100. It's about 100 pounds, a little over 100 pounds. Can fly between 30 and 1,500 feet and can carry a wide array of semi-automatic weapons, including a 40-millimeter grenade launcher.
Yeah, so I want to know how it deals with recoil.
Well, it has a recoil stabilization technology, high levels of accuracy, one would hope so, Now, if they made this thing autonomous, that's when it gets into some pretty scary territory.
Well,
Skynet.
I would assume that you'd have to have some sort of programming to it, say, go here to this waypoint and do this thing or look for this thing. But I'm sure it has cameras on it and all that kind of stuff. There has to be a human operator behind it somewhere.
And
what if you do in the heat of the battle? Oh, I'm just about out of juice. Return to base.
What happened? Now, we've had bad guys grab our drones in mid-flight and redirect them already.
Of course.
Fortunately, they haven't turned them back on us, but that becomes the cyber war.
Yeah.
These things better be a whole lot more secure than your average IoT if they're going to send these things out.
It'd be pretty simple to program some sort of fail-safe to just have it either detonate or destroy itself upon
or not work.
Yeah.
Right.
If it gets subverted. So this is going to be the warfare. This is what all those coders can do who are looking for a job.
Better yet, find a way not to have war in the first
place, of course.
It'd be hard for this to be the complete future of war because you can't just have drones fighting drones. That'd be, well, kind of pointless and just be, you know, technology rubbing against itself. Well, I'm not sure you're really gaining or losing anything.
It would be kind of cool, though, if Kim Jong-un woke up and there was like a whole cloud of these things hovering outside his castle there or whatever it is he lives in.
Let's send Iron Man.
There we go. Tony Stark, where are you? Hey, Musk, get busy. Boomer Tech Radio, Bob of the Hour, coming up. Bob, Brendan, Allen, Mike, back with more tech news you can use after this.
It takes you to your place of work. It gets your kids to school, practice, recitals, and to visit friends and relatives. It takes you on your adventures, and it brings you home again safely. It's your car or light truck, and for most of us, it's our second biggest investment. So when your vehicle needs routine maintenance or major repairs, it just makes sense to go with the very best. Here in Shasta County, that means one thing: Advanced Automotive. Advanced Automotive is Redding's only shop that's listed on RepairPal.com, part of a nationwide network of shops that are regularly evaluated for superior training, guaranteed fair prices, and excellent customer reviews. And Advanced Automotive backs up their work with something you won't get anywhere else, a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty. Don't just take my word for it. Log on to RepairPal.com, enter your make, model, and zip code, and read what your friends and neighbors have to say. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Redding, 244-4423.
The MASH Bash is coming Saturday, August 12th. Hi, Rob Burrows inviting you to the VFW Hall in Anderson for MASH Bash 2017. Dress up with your favorite MASH character for a fun evening with barbecue dinner from the Shasta Association of Grillers and Smokers, live music from Wildcard and Chris McCandless, auction, drawings, costume contest, and a great night of fun supporting the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center. For tickets, call 378-2280, and thanks for your support.
Hey, Linda, where do you think the best place in town is to get a sandwich?
Well, my favorite is the Best Little Sandwich Shop. I like the one on Eureka.
Well, you know, they've got four locations. They have Anderson, another place on Churn Creek in Redding, and, of course, Palisadro.
Remember the party we went to the other day? The food was catered by the Best Little Sandwich Shop, and it was amazing.
It was some of the best food I've had at any one of those types of events.
Just mention Carl and Linda Bott on KCNR 1460. Get 10% off at the Best Little Sandwich Shop at any of the four locations.
Check out the menu at tbls.com. The Best Little Sandwich Shop.
Here's another energy-saving tip from REU, Redding's Electric Utility. Consider replacing incandescent light bulbs in your home with energy-efficient LED light bulbs. LED bulbs use up to 75% less energy, generate no heat, last up to 25 times longer than incandescent bulbs, and offer comparable or better light quality than other types of lighting. For more energy-saving tips, visit us at reupower.com or call us at 339-7200. REU and you, powerful together.
It is tough establishing a new business in California, and even tougher if you're trying to understand the multiple laws that seem to have no other reason but to make your life harder. How do you deal with those legal hurdles while trying to build this new business or expand an existing one? By having your own qualified expert assist you. Douglas Wright, attorney at law, specializes in business law and is well-versed on the morass of legal questions facing a California business. Douglas Wright, a professional corporation, 530-243-6000 or douglaswrightlaw.com.
Join Aaron Ryan, Bill Cundiff, and Bob Martin for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon till 2. Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than the mainstream media sound bites.
Here on KCNR 1460 AM, we've got the experts on politics, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, property rights, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
The archives are always available online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join us this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. And we welcome your suggestions for future topics and guests at wethepeopleradio.us. We the People, now on Sundays from noon till 2 on AM 1460 KCNR.
From working families to small businesses or government agencies, it's important to have quality care for the cars and light trucks that are essential to getting the job done. Here in the North State, that means Advanced Automotive of Redding, where they pride themselves on old-fashioned honesty, quality personal attention, and personal responsibility to get the work done right the first time.
Why else would they be able to offer a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty on their repairs? Every mechanic at Advanced Automotive is an ASC-certified master technician who takes pride in their work, something that's earned Advanced Automotive recognition from RepairPal.com, the leading provider of auto repair and maintenance information to consumers. From the family minivan, your daughter's first car, or a yard full of company vehicles, Advanced Automotive should be your go-to repair shop. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 5756 F Westside Road. Call 244-4423 or check the customer reviews at RepairPal.com.
Welcome back. Boomer Tech Radio, Bob, Brenda, Alan. Lots and lots of tech news, as much as we can fit into a two-hour show. Even less if you're listening to the podcast, because you don't get all those
ads and the news and all that stuff.
And the news and all. Although,
no commercials.
Yeah, commercial-free. If you want commercial-free, pick up the podcast, download it to your device, listen to it at your convenience, boomertechradio.com to listen directly or download from your favorite podcast service.
And you can even pause it. You can't do that with
That's
your radio.
Right. You can't do that. You cannot pause your radio.
Right.
Indeed. So it's not just things with wires hanging out of them for the that we touch on this show. Any new technology that and some old technologies. We're going to talk about that maybe in our next hour. But Brenda has a now. Football helmets originally were made out of leather.
Yeah, that's right. More like skull caps. You know, they sort of look like swimming caps.
And the modern football helmet is actually thought to contribute to injuries because
of its design.
Yeah, and you feel invincible. You feel like you can shove your head through a brick wall. The trouble is, your head stops, your brain doesn't.
Right. And so what has happened is that technology is being used to design a more brain-friendly, anti-brain injury, anti-concussion type of helmet. No, helmets to the recent past have mostly been built to prevent skull injuries or
right.
skull fractures. And they've done a very good job of that. They have a very hard shell on the outside. And they have been very good about doing that. But then it doesn't help what happens within the brain.
You get a TBI.
Right.
Just because your skull doesn't fracture doesn't mean your brain
isn't
jostling around
in
there.
Exactly. Yeah. And this comes from Fox Smart and Safe Tech online, and I don't believe it's referenced in the
Boomer Tech Radio magazine on Flipboard.
There we go. Thank you. Gosh, I cannot think here. Well, I can think of it, but it's not coming out of the mouth. At any rate, these new helmets go funk instead of crack. If you've heard football helmets being hit together, they kind of clack together. Well, the new ones go thunk because they have a different type of design, and they're layered. The outermost layer deforms like a car bumper. So what it does is it's energy absorbing. That's why those car panels and car bumpers are designed the way they are, is to absorb energy before.
So you sort of have like Dr. Scholl's foot inserts for your head.
In a way. But that outer layer deforms and yields to the energy, so it slows down the impact forces, or it absorbs, takes the slam out of those forces. And then the next layer is actually what they call a reflex layer of columns, and they bend and eventually buckle upon impact. So there's another shock-absorbing structure, if you will. The third layer is a very thin, very hard shell, and that's the one that protects the brain or the head from skull fractures. And then finally, the innermost layer, I guess, is sort of like a sleep number or a
foam
type thing. Actually,
like I said, Dr. Scholl's foot cover.
Well, there's that. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm really drawing a blank. What kind of mattress do we sleep on?
Tempur-Pedic.
That's
memory
what I'm trying
foam.
To think. Memory foam type thing. Yep. So the innermost layer is a foam liner, and that conforms to the player's head. Now, this doesn't completely stop the occurrence of brain injuries necessarily, but it slows the energy down enough to where what the player does get is much less severe than it was before, and it may even prevent some injuries.
It would seem to me that they're going to have now on packages, you can put a sticker with a little glass thing in it that if the package takes too much G-force, the sticker turns red. And I think they're going to have to do something like that. If there is a certain amount of force applied to the thing, a red dot appears on the side. They have to pull it out of service. And, you know, these things are going to cost a couple of $100 each. So not sure what that's going to do to athletic programs. But these brain injuries are becoming a real problem.
Oh, definitely.
And to the point where it may be that either American style and several other sports that involve this kind of contact may have to be heavily regulated.
If you have to have like eight different, you know, replacement helmets for every player, depending on how often they break or buckle or whatever, that's going to slow down the game quite a bit. And well, it's going to cost a lot too if they're not NFL level.
This is made by the one that I'm talking about. It's called the 01, and it's made by, I don't know how to pronounce the company's name, VICIS. It's a Seattle-based sports equipment company. And granted, these helmets cost quite a bit. They're about $1,500 a piece.
Oh, geez.
Which is an
hard
absolute...
Hard to think of a high school... Yeah, but go ahead.
This is an absolute... drop in the bucket, not even a drop in the bucket. It is a molecule in the drop of a bucket of NFL level monies that's involved here. I mean, players could buy two or three of these and not even think about it, right? So it's actually been tested. They've had it on football players, and the people that have worn it, particularly linemen, have said that they don't feel the impact as much.
Yeah. For something that's like the NFL, but you know there's going to be push to get these down at the kid level, and where's that going to come from?
Well, this is an initial cost.
Right.
So they probably will have various versions of it, of course. But
now, if these things could be refurbished at a lower cost rather than having to buy an entire new one, well, we'll see.
Right. So the more they make or the more common it is, and then the more competition there is, and then you're probably going to find the cost of them does come down, but
especially if you can find a way to just fix, if they have it like segment and they can just replace the outer parts that break or collapse on purpose, then that would make it even better.
Like your car bumper. Mm-hmm. Just replace that part. That's another opportunity as well. So for these sorts of things. So it's kind of early in the game with this, and I'm sure that they're going to develop more and more. I'm not sure I agree with young people getting their brains knocked about real hard. Just because, you know, young folk don't need that, but...
Right.
Yeah, it's getting less and less popular for the youngins anyway.
Right.
Anybody in high school or less, it's just getting way less popular.
So why can't you do things like play flag football? I recognize that it's not the
Gorilla
Fest.
You tried to sell that one in Texas.
Well, it's not the Gorilla Fest that tackle football is, but, you know, when it comes to safety of people
and
that sort of thing, it's just not worth it.
The argument has been made that a helmet that makes you feel the pain a little bit, but because we don't have nearly the incidence of brain injury in sports like rugby or Australian rules football, or because they don't have the armor plating. You know, when you hit somebody, it hurts.
Right.
So that tends to get people to not try to be a human, you know, try to... Look what happened to, like, Richard Perry, you know, the refrigerator. I mean, by the time he was done, there was pretty much nobody home.
The skiing, snow skiing.
Oh, yeah.
When they design new boots, and there's breaks in the legs and whatnot.
Right, right.
They're of a different kind and sometimes more spectacular, so... Sometimes this new protective equipment, a new way of doing things, isn't always safer. Yeah, it raises a whole new set of problems. So who knows what that'll be. But maybe these helmets or the technology in these helmets will help, and that would be a good thing in the long run.
So have you noticed lately – now, normally Brenda and I do not watch network television, haven't for ages –
And I don't know how much you watch, Alan.
I haven't paid for TV in 5-6 years.
Okay. Do you watch some on-air stuff, or is it all strictly online?
No,
okay.
I don't watch anything on air except for when I'm riding on my elliptical at the gym, but that's not really watching.
So, well, and you're not paying for it. You know, it's one of those things.
So have you seen the new Microsoft ads for the Surface? You know, it does everything except eggs over easy.
They're weird.
Yeah.
No, the Surface ads that I've seen are just music and show you stuff, and they don't really say anything, and you're just going like, okay.
Yeah, if you did not already have knowledge of what a Microsoft Surface is,
you would just go, no sense.
Well, according to Consumer Reports, and then the neat thing about Consumer Reports, of course, they don't take ads. You can't buy them, essentially. You can't buy a good review in Consumer Reports. The breakage rate for Microsoft Surface devices is, quote, significantly worse than for other manufacturers' laptops and tablets. Apple, of course, is laughing their butt off. Consumer Reports says it was removing the recommended designation for Surface products.
Recommended designation? What? What's that mean?
They don't. They no longer recommend it.
Yeah, they're no longer.
Oh, Consumer Report no longer recommends.
Yeah, it's no longer a Consumer Reports Best Buy. You know, they're instead saying, "Nah, you may want to steer clear of this product." That's a huge blow to Microsoft, by the way, which is hinging its fortunes on the Surface.
So it does everything but stay in one piece.
Yeah. An estimated 25% of those with Microsoft Surface devices would be presented with significant problems by the end of the second year of ownership.
Well, that's about how long Apple products last anyway, so...
Well, not exactly.
No, I think Apple's got better durability than that in terms of hardware.
I just mean electronic gadgets in general these days. They have a shelf life of about 2 years.
Brenda's, what year is the iPad that your brother now has? That's, I think we got that 8 years ago.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yep. And I have a, it doesn't do much because the operating system is so hopelessly out of date, but I use it for an attached storage drive. I have a 2008 Mac Pro Tower with four drive bays in it. It's essentially an NAS, but it still boots up reliably. The thing was built like a tank. I have a 2012 MacBook Pro that I'm not letting go of until I absolutely have to, because it's, again, a very solid laptop computer.
So it turns on and runs what you need it to run, then whatever.
Fortunately, you know, Microsoft's had a lot of marketing hype and that sort of thing, but... the Surface does serve as the face of the company, but it isn't a big part of their overall revenue.
Right. Okay.
So from that perspective...
But reputation is everything.
Oh, of course. And the Surface revenues declined year over year in the past two quarters anyway. So it's not doing terribly well. Yeah. And of course, Microsoft isn't used to being in the manufacturing business. That's kind of new to them, and... It doesn't surprise me that they're maybe having a few pitfalls here.
Microsoft, of course, disputes the study, saying the company's return and support rates differ significantly from the Consumer Reports study.
Of course.
They would say that.
Of course they would.
To ease the stockholders.
Exactly.
Nothing wrong. Nothing to see
nothing
here.
Wrong
move
here.
Along. Move along.
In true corporate ease, the statement from Microsoft says, "We don't believe these findings accurately reflect Surface owners' true experience or capture the performance and reliability improvements made with every Surface generation."
That was definitely written by a marketing hack right there. That's true marketing right there.
So, yeah. You know, I want a computer that I can, you know, has some meat to it. You know, call me – well – Alan's seen my main PC at home. That thing is it's this beast in a box.
Yeah, I mean, I want to make sure I have actual room inside my case, and you know, yeah, like I said, meat to it.
Yeah, and yes, it's a nerd thing, but I like to be able to look through the side and see the lights, and it's got a liquid cooling system. And when my liquid cooling system started to have a problem, I was able to fix it. And these things that are just all one molded piece can't do that.
No. I'd rather the interior of my computer be about 80% air.
Yeah.
Just so that I can actually have some space to move around in whenever I need to do something
with it. And I can still, you know, I upgraded the video card. I can put in new drives. But that's not for everybody. Some people, the idea of changing out their hard drive, like I did with my MacBook, just they go, ah, you know, they might as well be defusing a nuclear weapon.
I keep trying to convince my online friends that they just need to make their own computer, build one. Like, I can pick out all the parts for you. You can just put it together. It's if it fits this where it goes, it's a lot less scary than you think it is.
I've done it in competition. I sucked at it, but a couple of times I've built a computer, and it worked.
Yeah, you knew what to put the components were supposed
to
do and all
that
stuff.
Step-by-step thing. It was the build-your-own PC competition down in Las Vegas.
Wow, how fast can you make it turn on?
Yeah,
huh.
From the time the bell rings to the time it boots up and logs into the system.
I'm guessing the guy that won was like 3 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course they practice or something.
Right.
Know.
Yeah, you'd have to practice.
They do these things all the time, and I think 3 to 6 minutes was definitely the fastest.
I did not come in dead last.
Now,
just like third from it.
Now, if they had to actually open up the packaging, that might take a little bit longer.
Yeah, they was laid out.
And you got a neat toolkit for doing the contest.
Yeah, it was a charity event.
Now, did you have to screw in everything, or could you just leave it on the table?
Nope. The fasteners had to be in.
Yeah.
All the connectors had to be properly seated. I don't think you had to put the sides back on.
I could get it to turn on without fastening it for, like, after about, you know, 1 minute.
No,
like,
turn.
I get invited to one of these things. You're coming with me.
Yeah, could have gone in the case. Well, the deal with those folks that do it real fast is they, you know, don't read the instructions. They just look at the component and know what it is.
Right.
Bob could have done a lot more of that, but he didn't have the confidence. But you were not skunked. You didn't.
I didn't come in dead last.
You didn't come in dead last either time that you've done it.
Yeah, you'd have to be to get super fast. You'd have to be really, really familiar with motherboard layouts, because all those little buttons and doodads and whatnot on your case that actually like tell your computer to turn on or whatever else and power and all that all have like little tiny little pins on the motherboard, and they're all generally run right next to another. That's most of the thing I have to reference whenever building one.
Yeah.
And I guess if you just know where they all are generally, then you have that memorized, and that would be no problem at all. But you'd also have to have the dexterity to get them on the right.
Yeah, in order to qualify, you did have to have the drives properly seated and the
it had to boot up
the CD properly, the CD-ROM properly installed. I think they dropped that this last time.
The
memories were already in place.
Yeah, and you had to boot up and have it talk to the server.
Yeah.
What was really cool about that event, though, is that it's a charity event, and no one there got to keep the computer that they put together.
But the computer you built went to the institution of your choice, and here in Reading, it was Reading School of the Arts.
And got the Schrader Planetarium as well.
Yeah, the year before, with the time before.
Hmm.
Since it was neat.
Since we're on the nerd track here, I will my resident hardware expert, of course, is Alan. So this new CPU from AMD is it's a beast.
It's a 16 core.
What?
You know, you have a lot of
cores. What do you get?
You know, a while ago we had dual cores. Whoa, dual core.
Like,
that's
wow.
Like
a quad
like,
core CPU, quad core, baby.
Yeah, you have a quad core.
Really something.
No, a lot of that just came with it starting to get harder and harder to actually make processors faster, just because, you know, we're starting to run up against
brute force
limitations of things. So they had the idea of, why don't we just have two processors?
Right.
And so
massive parallel processor.
Then the dual core processor was born, and it's been continuing on that line. The quad core is kind of the standard these days for the most part. But there has been 8 cores around. They just haven't really picked up steam for it. But again, all these your computer operating system and programs and whatnot actually have to be designed and programmed with these extra cores in mind to actually make use of
things. Right, because the code has to be able to assign different parts of the problem to different cores
to
all run in parallel, then put everything back together.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You have to – it's hyper-threading. You have to – say, okay, this bunch of spits some information, you go do over there, this you go do over there, there you go over there, and once it's all done, you just put it back together, like you said. But there's nothing out there right now except for maybe some people over in AMD HQ that actually runs an 16 core. You know what's wrong with 16 core? You can't really, don't have a good name for it. You can go like octo core and dual core and quad core, but 16, there is a word for that, but I don't know.
Why don't they just call it sweet core? Because it's like sweet 16.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Of course, many, many independently operating cores all working in concert is of course, a staple of video cards, which are the hardest working component in most PCs, right?
When you're running big, heavy, visual, 3D space, whatever, yeah, then
needs lots of computing power.
Right. Your video card, when it's being used for 3D rendering and whatnot, it's definitely working a heck of a lot harder than your processor is. It essentially is a processor just specialized specifically for what it needs to do to generate 3D graphics for your computer.
Here's a question. Were they the first ones to do that, in a 16-core?
Who? AMD just now?
Yeah.
Oh, and there hasn't been like...
At a commercial level, I think.
Yeah, no, there's no like 16-core video cards or anything like that, no. Not a lot of necessity to do that.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yeah. Now, I bucked the trend when I replaced my video card. I thought real seriously about the new 1000 series from NVIDIA, you know, the 1060, the 1080, or one of those.
Or the Titan.
Well, that's if you're really independently wealthy.
Oh, you want to go for the Titan? They're only like 5000 to pop.
But I discovered at the time I bought my new video card, and that's been almost a year, the most bang for the buck was the AMD RX 480. Mm-hmm. And so far, I've been very happy with it. When I play Skyrim, that looks pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
It's nearly photographic. Of course, that's the updated version of Skyrim. For those of you who don't know, Skyrim is a single-player game set in a... Well, how would you describe the Skyrim? It's
Lord of the Rings-ish.
It's high fantasy.
There's magic and elves and dwarves and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. But it's got a neat storyline, and, of course, it's part of the Elder Scrolls series of games. And Brenda's over there with that glazed look again, so we should we should move on.
Well, no, that's okay. I just don't do the game thing.
Speaking of games.
Not like that.
We're almost to the top of the hour, but very quickly, Alan, StarCraft, that's a blast from the past when it comes to video games. I guess it's being overhauled with some AI involved?
Well, StarCraft 2 has been out for a number of years now, but a week or two, or probably I guess a month or so, the AI finally beat the top Go player in the world.
Right, right.
And at that point, they were thinking of where else to go, and they were thinking more than likely that getting it to learn how to play video games, especially StarCraft 2, would be the next thing they wanted it to do.
Yeah, because the AI in most video games is really awful.
Or they're just given so so many advantages that the human player doesn't have that it doesn't play well. Yeah. It just is given...
It cheats.
Yeah, essentially it cheats. And you can outplay it just by being a better player against its advantages that it has. But anyway... Blizzard and Microsoft, or I think it was Microsoft, are working together to allow anybody who wants to play against this AI in order for it to learn more and more, games. Because
it's getting smarter.
Because you can't just give it a whole bunch of, things that can happen without having a whole bunch of games for it to reference.
Let's play a game.
Or no, that was,
would you like to play a game?
Yep.
Well,
how about a nice game of chess?
Yeah. Oh, no, global thermonuclear warfare. There we go. Still one of the great movies of the genre, of course, War Games. The remake was awful.
There was a remake?
Yeah, there was a remake.
Oh.
That's why it was so awful you didn't hear about it. Hey, we sure enjoy doing this show. Hope you'll stick around for the next hour of Boomer Tech Radio. It's Bob and Brenda and Alan saying, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other. Back with another hour of Boomer Tech right after the top of the hour news.
Good, honest, reliable. More than two decades ago, an auto repair shop opened in Reading based on those simple principles. Advanced Automotive is still family-owned, continuing on with those same ideals. So simple, yet rare in today's world. Modern cars and light trucks have grown more complex in the past 20-plus years, but those founding concepts still hold just as much importance when it comes to safety, reliability, and value for your dollar. Advanced Automotive of Reading promises that your vehicle will be serviced confidently by a technician with the training and knowledge to make professional repairs. Read what your friends and neighbors have to say about Advanced Automotive by going to RepairPal.com, where you can get an instant estimate of what you can expect to pay for your service or repair. Honest work at a fair price. It's not all that complicated. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 244-4423, or stop by 5756 F West Side Road.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. At least one person dead, 19 injured after a car plows into a crowd of people at the back end of a day of violent clashes and fighting between white supremacists and anti-fascist demonstrators in Charlottesville, North Carolina over the weekend. At least two people were injured during the demonstration, several arrests made. The mayor, the Democratic mayor, Michael Singer, puts the blame in Washington.
I'm not going to make any bones about it. I place the blame for a lot of what you're seeing in America today right at the doorstep of the White House and the people around the president.
But President Trump from his Bedminster, New Jersey estate just within the last half hour said he's spoken with Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe, and they both agree the hate and division must stop. And he said we must all come together with love for our nation and true affection for each other. The president says he wants to see a swift restoration of law and order in Charlottesville. Meanwhile, the president warned North Korea this week that Pyongyang faces grave consequences if it attacks Guam. And from his New Jersey resort on Friday, the president said his tough talk against North Korea reassures both South Korea and Japan.
Certainly they feel more reassured with me than they do with other presidents from the past, because nobody's really done the job that they're supposed to be doing. And that's why we're at this horrible situation right now. And it is a very bad situation. It's a very dangerous situation. And it will not continue, that I can tell you.
Heavy rains Friday, about five and a half inches worth, caused major damage at George Washington's iconic Mount Vernon home in Northern Virginia. About 100 feet of a brick wall located between the mansion and the Potomac River fell over after the estate was hit by that much rain in just an hour Friday. No historical buildings, though, were damaged. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Amazing to realize, but you know, it's been almost 2 years I've been talking with you about Relief Factor, and I can tell you I've been continually inundated with testimonials. This is Michael Medved, and I've received thousands of testimonials that come in telling me how excited people are to be out of pain. Like Bob from Ohio, who writes, I had a herniated disc in my back in 1984. I started taking Relief Factor, and for the first time, I have been completely out of constant, sometimes excruciating pain. I'm now able to work in the yard, around the house, and do my job in comfort. This is a great product. That's the end of the quote. If you're struggling with ongoing back or neck pain, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, or general muscle pain, aches, pains of any kind, do what tens of thousands of others have done so successfully. Go to ReliefFactor.com and order their 3-week quick start for just $19.95. 1-800-500-8384. That's 1-800-500-8384.
The search is still on for a jogger who shoved a woman into the path of a London bus.
Britain's Metropolitan Police Force has said that a man arrested earlier this week has now been eliminated from the investigation. The 41-year-old American investment banker was apprehended on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm. His lawyers later released a statement saying he wasn't involved and could prove he was in the United States at the time of the incident. The arrest came after police released surveillance footage showing a jogger in shorts and t-shirt banging into a pedestrian who tumbled in front of a double-decker bus. The bus swerved and then stopped to avoid hitting the woman. Police say inquiries continue to identify the jogger. Karen Shamas, London.
General Motors Company's Maven Rental Car Service struck a deal to be the exclusive car-sharing provider for the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. Students can now rent one of 18 cars for $5 an hour using the company's app, which is $3 cheaper than the usual starting rate. More on these stories at townhall.com. The operator of a Houston home health agency has been sentenced to 75 years in prison for a $13 million Medicare fraud scheme.
A federal judge in Houston sentenced Maria Neva, the 53-year-old Sugarland, Texas woman, was co-owner with her husband and nursing director of Fiongo Home Healthcare. Trial evidence showed Neva used the proceeds from fraudulent Medicare claims to pay kickbacks to patient recruiters for referring Medicare beneficiaries to her agency. So far, four other co-defendants have entered guilty pleas to charges arising from the federal probe. Patrick Foss reporting.
The Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic says it's canceling the upcoming season because of financial problems. The 45-year-old orchestra will play one concert in October, then shut down while it figures out its next move. It's $235,000 in debt. Yeah, musicians declined to take a 30% pay cut. The orchestra says it's going to take over $1 million to get it back. News and analysis at townhall.com.
It takes you to your place of work. It gets your kids to school, practice, recitals, and to visit friends and relatives. It takes you on your adventures, and it brings you home again safely. It's your car or light truck, and for most of us, it's our second biggest investment. So when your vehicle needs routine maintenance or major repairs, it just makes sense to go with the very best. Here in Shasta County, that means one thing: Advanced Automotive. Advanced Automotive is Redding's only shop that's listed on RepairPal.com, part of a nationwide network of shops that are regularly evaluated for superior training, guaranteed fair prices, and excellent customer reviews. And Advanced Automotive backs up their work with something you won't get anywhere else, a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty. Don't just take my word for it. Log on to RepairPal.com, enter your make, model and zip code, and read what your friends and neighbors have to say. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Redding, 244-4423.
Boomer Tech Radio is the name of the radio show. I am Bob Belongi.
I'm Brenda Belongi.
And I'm Alan Belongi.
Bringing you tech news you can use with goodies, gadgets, gizmos, and, well, I guess that's what we have, the tech news you can use with goodies, gadgets, and gizmos. Oh, it's the end of a long week, and lots of stories that we're covering with this week's episode. Of course, you can download this show on Stitcher, iTunes, or Google Play Store. Go directly to the website, boomertechradio.com. If you have the Flipboard app, subscribe to Boomer Tech Radio Magazine. If you don't have the Flipboard app, get the Flipboard app because it's a really cool app.
If you like news, it's pretty useful.
Yeah. And then another app that I'm going to suggest, if you have that pile of magazines that you never get around to reading and you end up actually having to pick up this large pile of dead trees and take them out and throw them away, and you're kicking yourself because you're eight issues behind, get Texture.
Yep.
Best $10 a month you're going to spend if you like to read magazine articles.
Well, what's really nice about it is that you can pick and choose. I mean, how often do you read a magazine from cover to cover? Most folks just don't do that.
Right.
But there's lots of magazines of interest, or let's say you have an interest and you would love to subscribe to three or four that are of that genre, could be crafts, sports, entertainment, doesn't make any difference what it is. And yet you only want this particular section out of this one magazine every time. That's the great thing about Texture. We're not paid to advertise for Texture.
We just happen to think it is really
this is just a cool app. Just our experience with it. You can thumb through and pick and choose the articles that you want to read, and that way you can sample more stuff.
So if you want to look at just the really juicy parts of Cosmo, go ahead.
That's right.
Exactly.
My mom used to call that her dirty magazine. She'd get
it is a dirty magazine.
Now, I have a subscription to Make Magazine. And for the price of my subscription to Make, plus a few other, like if we combine Make, Smithsonian, and what else did we?
Oh, a few other ones.
And a few others. To add to that, we now get, And if you have an iPad, it shows up nice. But Brenda reads the magazines on her Android Samsung just fine. I've got CNET, Macworld, Make, National Geographic, PC Magazine, PC World, Popular Mechanics, Popular Science, Smithsonian, Sound and Vision, Wired, and that's just the sports. The science and technology.
Yeah, there, and I filtered
well over 100 magazines for one low price.
Filtered through there, you're not going to find something esoteric like Aviation Science Weekly. That's not in there. But the number of magazines that they have is growing.
They do have flying. And, which is a more general aviation.
Yeah. They also have several boating magazines.
Field and Stream.
Outdoors, the Popular Photography or something, I think, is in there. So Shutterbug is in there. I know that. Yep.
But do they have National Enquirer?
Well, no, that because...
I don't think so, but they have a whole lot of other ones of that genre, trust me.
What do you mean of that genre? And of truth-telling?
Of the entertainment world. And well, that's true. Not exactly like National Enquirer. Although they should. That would be amazing.
Well, when I first saw the cover for Ideas and Discoveries, and I'll show you guys the that's one of the magazines in here. Doesn't that look like a tabloid? That's the top
it's
one.
It's the way the format
ID,
is.
It looks like one of the old UFO magazines.
Sort of, comic bookish in a way.
Yeah.
The couple things with it, though, if you're trying to use it on a PC, it's miserable.
Yeah.
That is written for tablets. Yes, it's a miserable experience to use it on your PC.
So you'd have a better experience emulating a tablet on your computer to use it?
Yeah. Well, if you could, for one thing, you end up putting your tablet in portrait form to use it effectively.
Hmm. Yeah, now my 12.5-inch iPad Pro, 12.9-inch, I use it in portrait format.
Yeah, and that's a nice size for text. That's the size of a magazine. It's bigger than a magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can, flip pages. I think you can search things within the magazines, as I recall. And it'll tell you whether you have a new – you can sign up for a notification that there's a new edition of your favorite magazine out and that sort of thing. But it's kind of nice because it allows you to go to back issues. I think you can bookmark things.
Yeah.
And find those again, and you could do a screen capture and print things as well.
Yeah.
If you're after recipes or whatever, there's always analog. You can write it in a book.
Indeed.
A notebook.
Huh. So, since we have just given those guys a bunch of free advertising.
Well, it might not appeal to everybody, but...
Well, we do like to talk about things that we find highly useful.
One of the things we were talking earlier about network television or on over-the-air television... and not spending much time watching it, what I'm finding is I'm even wandering away from social media a lot. In keeping up with some friends is fine, but I just get too distracted with a bunch of nonsense, and I'm finding myself starting to read things again, which includes rifling through texture and looking at things there and pick up something that has some substance.
Some substance. Speaking of substance, now if you listen to a lot of podcasts, you have heard a lot about a company called Blue Apron. Now, Blue Apron's premise was that it's too much trouble to go to the store and buy the ingredients to cook homemade food, but you don't want to, for people who didn't want to eat a lot of packaged food and were trying to get away from fast food, this was a way to have home-cooked meals with a lot of the prep work already done for you, and maybe even if you and easy to follow recipes. Well, the whole idea of Blue Apron was that it was a subscription service. They sent you a box, hopefully that wouldn't get left on your doorstep in the hot sun.
Speaking of packaging,
yeah,
a lot of packaging.
Yeah, because they got to keep the stuff cool and all
right,
that.
There's that.
Mm-hmm. Blue Apron sounded good, but they are suffering. The company's stock now down more than 14% on its last earnings report. It's trying to get, trying to find its way back. But when we first heard about Blue Apron, we thought, on paper it looks pretty good, but it's in the details. And I think that a lot of people who may be looking for fresh food with convenience still don't want to go through the trouble of fixing it, and they'll just say, to heck with this, and they'll go out and get the fast food or go to Olive Garden or something. Because this stuff is not cheap.
No, it sounds like it's – I didn't see what it's going to cost, but my issue always is remembering all the little itty bitty things that we need to go in there. And so I like, you know, I have all of my stuff ready and I'm ready to go. And then like, oh, I forgot the cottage cheese.
Some people don't want to cook, though. I think folks might have thought that this was going to be a, you know, quick
put together, heat neat
kind of idea.
Put it all in a bowl and throw it in the oven.
Right. It's not necessarily that way. And folks just don't take the time. And the other thing I suspect, that nowhere in this article does it say why people are not, you know, why their customer numbers are not up.
Yeah.
That part isn't in this article, but I'm going to speculate that folks don't want to cook. It's a pain to stop the subscription. You have to opt out. You can turn it on and off, but you have to turn it on and off. It's not that big a deal. The choices are there. The portions are probably maybe not what people are expecting, so that it says four portions, and most people are just like, well, maybe that's three.
Yeah, four portions according to the, like, you know, the health administration,
right, exactly.
Not according to actual people.
Deck of cards, piece of chicken, you know. Yeah. And that may not appeal to some folks. And I'm just guessing here, but the cost, they say, oh, well, you know, and they give you this price comparison of, yeah, go to Whole Foods, otherwise known as Whole Paycheck. It's not cheap to shop at Whole Foods.
Right.
So it's not necessarily cost effective. They say, well, it's cheaper than going out. Well, most everything is cheaper than going out.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Amazon, of course, was making a lot of noise about buying Whole Foods, and that may or may not happen. But they are also making noise about a ready-to-prepare food delivery service. And that really sent Blue Apron into a tailspin because Amazon is, of course, the online retailing 400-pound gorilla.
No, that's more like a 1,400-pound gorilla.
So Blue Apron, which, as I said, sponsors a lot of podcasts, may, in fact, be heading for the garbage bin, unfortunately.
Well, we can still try to ride it out, but once things start going one way in tech, they generally stay that way.
And the other big concern is, and this came to mind in the light of the next story we're going to cover, what happens? Can you imagine the liability? Because we hear about things like listeria or maybe something if you've got bad eggs or something like that.
Oh, yes. Getting salmonella.
So in the effort to get these packages boxed up and out the door in time, if they're supposed to be checked at every step, but what happens if a load of bad cheese goes out?
Right.
The liabilities would sink just about any company. In China, there's a big problem with not knowing where your food has been, Alan.
So, yeah, in China, there's not a whole lot of confidence, consumer confidence in Chinese-made food, G-O under Y. And so, well, you'd say the company, but it's more like the government because everything is government over there, has started implementing making use of blockchain. Now, I don't know if you remember, but blockchain is the type of information storage that's used in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin.
Right.
So that's the thing that keeps track of the transactions that all take place within Bitcoin here and there. And it's notoriously difficult to make any alterations to, if not impossible, to make any changes or anything to its history.
So does that operate on what they used to call like a checksum or something like that, that the... If you change the numbers inside, then it's going to fail that test.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It has a whole lot of fail safes in there to keep it very, very difficult, if not impossible, to edit anything on the inside. So they're starting to make use of blockchain to keep track of like where this. If you like go buy a steak or whatever, it'll show where that cow was born, generally, where it was raised and then slaughtered, packaged, and then shipped to that store.
Well, we're doing something similar to that with a lot of our food in the U.S., aren't we? If something bad hits the markets, they can backtrack it practically to the barn.
Yeah, I've heard of something like that. But they're doing this over in China because a lot of the the consumer confidence is really, really, really terrible, especially after in 2008 there was a tainted powdered milk that came out and killed six infants over
there.
Yeah,
the baby formula thing.
Right. And so more about 40% of people here in 2016 have low to no confidence in food products that was produced in China over there, which is, you know, not great. It's pretty bad, really. So since they're making use of this to keep track of everything along the line for steak and all sorts of other products, they're doing their best to get people more confident with buying from China over in China, which is funny because we get practically everything else from China over here. And we expect them to all have lead paint in them, you know? So we're already ready. We just don't want to have their food either.
Oh, dear me. Hey, now, for years we have espoused upon this program the need for non-stupid passwords. In other words, password, I love you.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, et cetera, et cetera. Because that's the first thing that an automated hacking program is going to try. The government actually came out with guidelines back in 2003. A man named Bill Burr generated guidelines. He had an 8-page guide. Yeah. He decreed that passwords should be made from strange mixes of capital and lowercase letters, numbers, and symbols, and they should be changed regularly. Well, we have espoused that quite a few times. Trouble is, most people don't want to go to that amount of effort and end up getting themselves hacked. So,
it turns out that the guy was just making crap up when he made up these rules because he had no data to run off of. He was just sitting there like, well, gosh, I guess there should be a lowercase and an uppercase and I don't know, like a capital special character, yeah, one of those.
Yeah.
Because he had no data to run off of, so he just made up all these rules thinking that's probably about right. From what I read, he wasn't entirely sure that this, how big of an effect it was going to even have, especially after companies adopted it from the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Well, supposedly the letter number mix isn't quite as effective as has been thought.
No.
You know, you must have at least one special character,
yes,
one number.
All of those. That's old school.
Yeah, that is old school.
Apparently computers can figure that out with not too long a time gone
and
by.
You forget the damn thing unless you write it down somewhere, so you end up having to get a new password, which every time you do that, it's easier for it to be intercepted. According to an article that appeared in Esquire magazine, it's actually a lot easier to simply take four words, which may or may not be related, and string them all together into a single, very long password.
Turns out that it takes longer for a computer to figure out that nonsensical string of words than it does for them to figure out the mixture of letters, numbers, you know, special characters or whatever.
Well, especially because, you know, how long and varied that the dictionary is. You look at the dictionaries, there's a couple more entries in there rather than what we have on our keyboard, you know?
Yeah.
And we can remember all of those a lot easier than a hashtag or an ampersand. I said hashtag instead of pound. Damn it.
That's funny right there. Yeah, there you go. A lot easier to remember to just pick four words that have meaning to you and maybe your significant other, put them all together, and be done with it. Although a lot of passwords limit you to 16 characters.
Right, which would make it difficult to go...
Leave
now,
the vowels.
Don't choose your favorite four-letter words.
Leave the vowels out.
There you go.
Oh, that'll be easy to remember and type out every time.
It is actually not that bad. Yeah, it's like a little shorthand.
But even just short little phrases are really easy to remember, you know, like snake battery or something like that.
Yeah.
Like even that's a heck of a lot simpler to remember.
Right, than some odd combination of things.
And a computer's not going to guess that in any reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
And so, you can remember it and type it out real easy. You're not going to forget that one.
Right. My dog has fleas. Although, don't make it a phrase that's stupidly easy to remember.
Don't make it anything that makes any actual sense.
Yeah.
My dog has fleas or I love you. That's going to be guessed real quick.
Yeah.
You have to go like really weird, like car spear or, you know, ice cream battery.
Or piano couch, yeah.
Fish bottom rock.
But you can easily remember these things. They make no sense, but you can remember them, no problem.
Yeah.
Be fun if they rhymed.
Yep.
The words rhymed.
Yeah. So, Alan, we have had folks of great wisdom like Mr. Musk. But now he's a smart guy.
He is a smart guy.
Elon Musk is a very smart guy. But he is convinced that we're, you know, about 2 weeks away from the Terminator apocalypse, too.
That's his opinion.
And that everybody's going to be thrown out of work and it's in chaos in the streets, dogs and cats living together. obvious Ghostbuster reference there.
Yes.
But there have been proposed, of all places, one of the countries that has one of the highest incidents of manufacturing robots and robots wandering around everywhere doing their thing. In South Korea, they want to introduce a robot tax.
Yeah, they've considered introducing something like this in the U.S. too, but it's gotten a lot closer to actually happening in South Korea. Well, the idea is if people are being replaced by robots, if there needs to be some sort of extra cost upon the company because they are displacing real workers, right? That's the idea behind it.
Right.
So, and the government's not making tax money anymore off of those payroll taxes of people they're no longer employing. This is kind of a double-edged sword from their perspective. So they're proposing an idea where if you have robots performing or taking over jobs that real people are doing, they're going to tax you of a similar rate to what people would be, or that the company would be paying if they had people working there instead. It'll still be cheaper for the company in the long run since they won't have to pay, well, insurance, and the actual pay scale of the person, or all sorts of other things. But the government will get their money, and they'll be penalized, I guess is the right way, for not actually hiring and paying real people.
Yeah, and one of the things that's being bandied about is that these robot taxes are then used to fund universal basic income. And the idea is that you pay everybody who sits around and does nothing a certain amount of money, and they're supposed to go out and buy needed goods and services, and that will pump the economy along. Baloney! I'm going to go all conservative here, conservative PO'd white guy, and say, baloney, you give these people a bunch of money, a bunch of them are going to spend it on drugs and alcohol, and then come back begging for food money. Tell me that's not going to happen.
I'm not sure that's going to happen in South Korea, but
yeah. But if they adopt that in the U.S., I mean, we've already got an opioid problem. I mean, imagine giving everybody a certain amount of money.
Well, they're doing that pretty much anyway in the welfare state.
Yeah,
but
okay, I'll get off the political high horse.
I think that's not what Boomer Tech is about.
But I think it's a terrible idea. You know, and I hear lots of people advocating for the universal basic income, and I don't think it's going to work. It might work in Denmark, where I believe they're trying it on a trial basis. But I don't think in the U.S., because if you take away people's incentive to earn a living and to have some pride in what they do, you've lost something as a country.
Well, this conversation is going to get more and more relevant as more and more people lose their current existing jobs
to technology
between AI getting better, automation getting better, and in general minimum wage getting higher and driving.
Isn't dissimilar from states like Oregon thinking about charging folks with hybrid or electric cars extra.
Oh, right, because they're not buying enough
gas. They're not buying fuel, so they're not paying
the gas tax.
Gas tax, which is supposed to go into the maintenance of the roads and such like.
In the 2 minutes before the bottom of the hour, Alan, how in the world would you get malicious computer code into somebody's DNA?
Well, it's not somebody's DNA. It's synthetic DNA.
Synthetic DNA?
Yeah, so they just said some researchers were seeing what they can do. to try to mess with these DNA readers. And essentially, DNA breaks down into four different numbers.
Right, right.
And, well, letters, really, I guess, if you want to classify it the normal way. But anyway, with how pretty much these readers work is when they read DNA, they read it kind of like code for a computer.
ATGC, yeah.
Right. And so while they can make a synthetic DNA that kind of that reads exactly like real DNA, except it's all just made up by combining a whole bunch of molecules together. It's just a bunch of nonsense, really. But to the computer, when it reads it, it gets malicious, like virus malware, as it downloads and reads it all, which is kind of funny. It's not really any real worry to, like, people injecting malware into their DNA and messing up retina scans or whatever, but it's just kind of interesting that they can get malware in through DNA, these DNA readers.
Whew. It gets stranger and stranger. Hey, when we come back on Boomer Tech Radio for our last segment, retro tech, what were the hottest products that everybody had to have 20 years ago? The list is going to absolutely amaze you. Might make you laugh, too. It's Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brendan Allen. More of the tech news you can use right after this.
From working families to small businesses or government agencies, it's important to have quality care for the cars and light trucks that are essential to getting the job done. Here in the North State, that means Advanced Automotive of Reading, where they pride themselves on old-fashioned honesty, quality personal attention, and personal responsibility to get the work done right the first time. Why else would they be able to offer a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty on their repairs? Every mechanic at Advanced Automotive is an ASC-certified master technician who takes pride in their work, something that's earned Advanced Automotive recognition from RepairPal.com, the leading provider of auto repair and maintenance information to consumers. From the family minivan, your daughter's first car, or a yard full of company vehicles, Advanced Automotive should be your go-to repair shop. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 5756 F Westside Road. Call 244-4423 or check the customer reviews at RepairPal.com.
What are you in the mood for dinner tonight? How about a Jack's Grill world-famous steak, a fork tender filet mignon, a hot and juicy New York steak or brochet of beef cooked to perfection and so tender you can cut it with a smile? Maybe deep-fried prawns or golden-fried chicken all served with garlic bread, hot baked potato or french fries, and a large family-style bowl of tossed green salad with homemade dressing of your choice. Are you in the mood? Meet friends and family at Jack's Grill, a Reading landmark since 1938. Open Monday through Saturday on California Street, downtown Reading.
Here's another energy-saving tip from REU, Reading's electric utility. Did you know some newer TVs, DVD players, and other items like chargers for electronic devices constantly draw a small amount of energy, even when off or not in use? When possible, either unplug or use power strips so you can easily turn off multiple items at once. For more energy-saving tips, visit us at reupower.com or call us at 339-7200. REU and you, powerful together.
Holiday Harbor, we've got it all for you. But we're more than just great houseboats. We have the vacation you have been looking for without the drive or airport hassle. Fishing boats, patio boats, 47-foot party cruisers, wakeboards, jet skis, and stand-up paddle boards. If it floats or you can pull it behind a boat, we probably have it for your enjoyment. Visit Holiday Harbor, exit 695 of Interstate 5, or go to LakeShasta.com. Holiday Harbor, your own vacation in town.
This is Carl Bott
and Ted Leidy.
Join us Wednesday, August 23rd at VFW Post 1934 for Reading Beer Week.
Carl and I will be serving New Glory craft beer along with some of your local favorites.
That's right. Not only that, but food's going to be available, appetizers, and you can play pool while enjoying your suds.
That's Wednesday, August 23rd at VFW Post 1934 right next to Woody's.
Starts at 3 p.m. and goes to 7 p.m. Come on down and buy Ted and I a beer.
This is Terry Oxley, pastor of True Life Church in Bella Vista. This is America, a country where at least half of the population still believe in godly moral values. They still believe this country was created for a godly purpose. We will never allow the overthrow of our country and Constitution from within. We will protect our God-given rights, such as freedom of speech and religion, and our right to protect ourselves and loved ones at any cost. But let's never forget, real freedom begins in a relationship with Jesus Christ. If you're looking for a no-nonsense church that's not afraid to talk about current issues and yet teaches the Bible, I invite you to be our guest. Our Sunday services are at 10 a.m. We are located on Deschutes Road, one block south of Highway 299 in Bella Vista. You can visit our website at truelifereading.com. We hope to see you soon, and remember, it's worth the ride.
Good, honest, reliable. More than two decades ago, an auto repair shop opened in Reading based on those simple principles. Advanced Automotive is still family-owned, continuing on with those same ideals. So simple, yet rare in today's world. Modern cars and light trucks have grown more complex in the past 20-plus years, but those founding concepts still hold just as much importance when it comes to safety, reliability, and value for your dollar. Advanced Automotive of Reading promises that your vehicle will be serviced confidently by a technician with the training and knowledge to make professional repairs. Read what your friends and neighbors have to say about Advanced Automotive by going to RepairPal.com, where you can get an instant estimate of what you can expect to pay for your service or repair. Honest work at a fair price. It's not all that complicated. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 244-4423, or stop by 5756 F West Side Road. One final segment of Boomer Tech Radio, and of course our theme music composed and performed by George Wood called 8-Bit Junkie. Came off the PodSafe Music Network. It is used by permission. Thought we'd wrap up this week with a look back. CNET did a great article about the tech of the Beanie Baby era. Who remembers Beanie Babies?
And they still exist. They still are bought and produced. And yeah,
some of the very rare ones are going for pretty insane amounts of money. But there was a time those things were everywhere.
I was never attracted to them, quite frankly. They always looked like the cheap Chinese manufactured stuff that they are.
Yeah. So let's go back to 1997. Let's party like it's 1997, the year we had Bill Clinton, Friends, Titanic, and of course, cutting edge technology.
He means the movie Titanic, not the actual ship.
Yes.
Correct.
Just in case you're really bad with,
history.
So 20 years into the past, the interweb was young, CD was king, and the cloud was a white fluffy thing over your head as you chatted on your phone brick. And I knew people who had brick phones. So in 1997, there were the browser wars.
Netscape Navigator is my browser of choice.
Yeah, Netscape Navigator. Because at the time, you had there was a big argument because Microsoft would bundle Internet Explorer free into the Microsoft operating system. But if you wanted a better experience, because IE was awful.
It always was.
Yeah. If you wanted a better experience, you got Netscape Navigator. Netscape was dominant. And AOL bought Netscape in 1999, just 2 years later. But Netscape was actually based down, had a big office down in San Diego. I remember driving by it during that time that I lived down there.
Mm-hmm.
Netscape had a big office down there.
Yeah, it was pretty popular for a while, and it just vanished one day. It was weird. Yep.
Only problem I have with this article and CNET, and I've run into this before with them, is they must have a ton of ads on their pages.
Okay.
So it takes forever
for
it to load on my tablet. I hate it.
The hot tech toy fad of 1997, the Tamagotchi.
And all of its little variants that came out with it.
The Tamagotchi, of course, a virtual pet on a keychain, was first popularized where else but Japan. The toys quickly sold out in stores, including KB Toys, which is no longer around.
Right, KB Stories is another one of those things from way back in the day.
Of course, there were several similar products, including Gigapets.
Mm-hmm. I had one that was a boxer, a little boxer. You connected a little dude. By the way, if you don't know what these are, they're little, you know, those like old Tiger toy electronics. They're practically like that.
They have a little LCD, black and white.
Yeah, about 30 by 30 pixel screen on there, and a little keychain. And you sat there and you'd shake it to get some points, and you'd feed it some virtual food to make it like you, and it'd do little tricks. And it was a different time back then. Okay?
Yeah, if you didn't feed your virtual pet, it would
get
sick.
It got sad and sick, and you had to give it medicine. These days, it'd all be microtransaction. You'd have to pay for all
these. Never heard of them.
Oh, you never heard of the for a while, these things were nuts.
They were everywhere.
Nope, I didn't wander in such circles. I didn't know anybody that had one. First I've ever heard of it.
The 90s were an awkward transition time between tape-based storage and various optical mediums. Now, for a time, it appeared that the mini disc was going to be the medium of choice. Sony's
like the zip drive.
Yeah, Sony and Sharp brought out special players. The magnetic optical 1 gigabyte disc, of course, had a lot more storage than anything else that could be re-recorded on. I know somebody who used a mini disc player for radio news for years, but it stopped being possible to get the discs. A mini disc can hold about 80 minutes of high quality music. The format never really developed a fan base. CDRs were a whole lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
You could burn CDRs for about 20 cents a piece.
They were bigger, they held less, but they were much cheaper.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, the same thing as regular CDs, so all the technology was already still around.
Now, back in 1997, we did have streaming audio.
Sort of.
And the king of players was the real player.
Oh, I never was fond of that thing.
If you were streaming music on a computer in 1997 on your CRT screen, chances are you used the Real Network Real Player. Now, of course, this was a dial-up modem era. You would likely spend buffering for minutes at a time rather than actually playing music.
But it would also sit there and play movies and whatnot poorly.
If you were at an extremely low resolution. But that I remember having Real Player, and in fact, I finally just ditched my Rhapsody subscription after, I don't know, I must have had that thing for 15 years.
Been a while.
Yeah. I finally just got rid of my Rhapsody subscription because the latest update, the Flash, wouldn't work on Mac-based hardware.
Right. They're trying to kill Flash everywhere.
Yeah, so.
Well, Apple doesn't like Flash anyway.
Not many people like Flash.
Why anybody would still have a website that requires Flash to view is beyond me.
Yeah.
That's just bad.
Yeah, it's silly.
1997 was the year that the Sony PlayStation came into its own. The system was actually launched in 1995. 32-bit CD-ROM equipped game. The nice thing about CD-ROMs is that, unlike floppy disks, it was impossible to copy them. Very difficult to copy them. State-of-the-art at the time, 128 kilobyte memory card saved your progress. DualShock controllers, which that design is still around.
Yeah, the console came out in 95. The DualShock controllers were the controllers that actually introduced the analog sticks for the PlayStation. And the PlayStation 1 really dominated the whole thing. The Nintendo 64, which is Nintendo's counterpart to it, did pretty well as well, but it just never quite got the same kind of hold that the PlayStation did. And coming along with the PlayStation
was, of course, Final Fantasy VII. And now we're up to, what, 15 or something, 18?
15 just came out, yeah, 15. Not that long ago.
The hottest PlayStation game of 97, technically.
Almost ever, yeah, really.
Gran Turismo sold more copies, but Final Fantasy VII, the more iconic game, had a deeply lasting impact. It had a storyline. Rather than just being a Twitch game, Final Fantasy actually incorporated a story arc that you had to work your way through.
Well, Final Fantasy had been on the PlayStation a lot before then, but there was kind of a weird naming scheme going on I'm not going to get into. But 7 was the... Since 7 was released with an already fairly big install base on people that had PlayStations, it was a whole new market, really, of people that had no idea what these RPGs, these weird little RPGs coming out of Japan, were. And it had some of these crazy pre-rendered backgrounds, which looked really gorgeous when you played it. And it just was a lot different than people were used to over here in the States. So that's why it became so popular and well-known for it.
One of the hopefully well-forgotten things that were out in 1997 that were supposed to really just dominate the market, web TV. Brenda, did you know anybody who had a web TV?
Yeah. I knew a couple people that had it.
It was, to say web TV was slow was an understatement. You spent a lot of time looking at the little dashed lines on the screen that represented a highway, the information superhighway.
And you had to,
while it loaded up.
When you wanted to type something out on the screen, you had to, you know, move the cursor over to the right letters, as I recall.
Unless you wanted to spring $100
for
the add-on keyboard.
The keyboard, the wireless.
$100 for a keyboard?
Wireless keyboard.
So essentially you turn your TV into a monitor for
into
a really
a
crappy
very
browser.
Low resolution.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay, that's wonderful.
At well, a whopping 480 lines of resolution.
Witness the result that it didn't survive.
Yeah, it did not. It was slow, it was cumbersome, badly designed, and best forgotten. However, 97 was the year that the Honda EV first came out. Had a battery could go 125 miles between charges.
Ooh,
even today, that's pretty good.
That's not bad. That's pretty average, actually.
So that's an electric car, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
EV Plus was only available for lease. When the lease was up, Honda took it back.
They wanted the battery back, basically.
What was it? The original Chevy Volt was the same way, I believe, and
people were very upset
when they had to. Now you can get a Volt and you can own it.
The Palm Pilot.
They're your very favorite.
By 19, now I had a Sony Clay, and I did have a Palm Pilot.
Same difference.
Yeah. Which you had to then tether to your home computer to exchange the information because it couldn't connect directly.
Well, you didn't have much of a keyboard on the thing anyway, so typing in it would be kind of a pain in the butt.
In 1997, the way to get and stay organized was to spend $300 for the Palm-produced electronic organizer. You would sync, and that's kind of what brought syncing into the lexicon. Very quickly, though, the BlackBerry took over that market and held onto it for quite a while until they were done in by the smartphone. So here we go. Now, Bill Clinton was not a internet-type person. He wasn't really a connected, geeky-type president like the last couple are. You know, imagine Bill Clinton with tweets.
We won't go there.
President Clinton sent a total of 2 emails while he was president. Vice President Al Gore, on the other hand, he kept a personal computer that he loved showing off to the press. He had an Atari.
I heard he invented the internet.
Well, Gore, technically, what he did was promote high-speed telecommunication bills, and the expansion of ARPANET, which was the forerunner of the internet that we all know, love, and sometimes hate.
That's basically the same thing as inventing the internet, right?
Yeah. He was ridiculed by the Republicans when he stated in 1999 that he took the initiative in creating the internet.
See? Developing the internet or something.
97 was also the year of Deep Blue.
Hey, that relates back to the whole StarCraft thing. That's the start of the whole thing. Computers starting to beat people in games.
IBM's Deep Blue supercomputer truly was the hottest tech of May 1997. It made history as the very first supercomputer to beat a world-class chess champion in a best-of-6 matchup. Deep Blue beat Barry Kasparov, and a lot of people thought that was it for the human race right then and there.
Now, just to be clear, modern-day AI that plays chess, the really good ones could probably mop the floor with Deep Blue.
Oh, yeah.
No problem.
Yep.
I remember these. Back before we had secure digital cards, there was the Sony Mavica camera. Hailed by Time as one of the all-time top 100 gadgets, the Sony Mavica FD5 solved the problem of sharing digital photos with a 3.5-inch floppy disk.
Now, those were old in 97, by the way.
Just snap, save to the disk, remove the disk, put the disk in the computer, upload the file, eject the disk, pass on the disk to the next person, and that's your viral 1997 style. Of course, a floppy disk of that size could hold about 1.2 megabytes of data.
1.44,
which doesn't make for a very detailed photo.
No, especially because, you know, decent pictures these days are like 5. So, I mean, you just need, you know, 4 floppy disks to fit 1 photo. That's a great idea.
Well, before 1996, you paid for your internet by the hour. Then along came a couple of companies that said, you know, if we charge a single price for internet access, we could clean up. And that's when all those AOL floppies and later on CD-ROMs started showing up bundled into every stinking magazine on the newsstand.
Now, what I liked was the run-up to the unlimited internet, where they started being like 100 hours per month, and then 200 hours per month, right. And then 300, and then it started getting into like ridiculous things like 2,000 hours per month, and then it started being like you had to math it out and be like, that would be 22 hours a day.
Yeah.
Really? Come on.
Yeah.
Like, it started getting really close to that's how many hours are in a month.
Yes, in late 1996, AOL, which was then known as America Online, or the company that bombarded everyone's mailboxes with floppy disks and CDs. I don't think in the late 90s I ever bought a single 3.5-inch floppy because you got them free in the mail.
Yeah, you just wrote over them, you know, and they weren't protected. But yeah, I'd make a
malware
Christmas,
hadn't been invented yet.
I made Christmas ornaments out of all the disks I got from them.
One of the funniest things I ever saw, Alan, was we saw a stage performance by these belly dancers, and the decorations on the stage were CDs with holes punched in them. Remember that, Brenda?
Looking like sparkly snowflakes or
and
whatever.
The pom-poms, the little white pom-poms.
It was the most bizarre thing ever.
It was weird. The tune, you can still come up with that.
It
still
haunts your nightmares.
Yes, it's bad.
Now, the iconic phone, and the phone that everybody who was anybody had to have during the late 90s was, of course, the Motorola StarTAC.
That looks pretty similar to brick phones from not that long ago, right there.
The personal cellular phone, as it was billed, put cell phones in ordinary people's hands. It set new standards, perfected the modern, Star Trek communicator flip phone configuration, weighed 3.5 ounces, and at the time, I think, cost about $600.
Which is, quite a bit more in today money.
Mm-hmm. That was also the year that Apple launched the PowerBook 1400. The machine listed for $2,500, $2,900, and this is in $1,997. Almost $3,000 if you wanted the optional CD-ROM. Think about what kind of laptop you can get for $3,000 in today's dollars.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it would.
That's a pretty pricey laptop right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And the specs, of course, on the PowerBook weren't our standards.
The thing in your phone, in your pocket, is way better. Way better.
But
A tablet has got that beat.
It was considered highly reliable, hailed for innovation. And, of course, if you look at this thing, it's about it's almost an inch and a half thick with a floppy drive on the front and then the CD-ROM off to the side. But some very similar things that we take granted for to this day.
What's interesting is some of those things didn't last very long. And yet when you look at smartphones, tablets, current modern laptops, they're all been around for a while now. Mm-hmm. They're not obsolete yet.
Nope.
Late 90s was the very first introduction of Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, no.
Which its fifth iteration that came out not long ago is on a track to being the most sold game. Well, it's not going to ever beat Tetris, but it's on its way to be the second most sold game ever.
Grand Theft Audio was
Auto. Yeah, audio. Grand Theft Audio?
Cars, not the stereos of the cars.
Grand Theft Auto was called the most violent piece of gaming on the PlayStation yet.
Yes.
On the PlayStation. There was plenty of other games from back then that were strangely extra violent.
Graphically, the game was actually, it was sort of a top-down. But it sold 125 million copies, and in the screenshot they've got has a gun in the corner and these splats that I assume are your victims that you just ran over.
Mm-hmm. It was a strange day.
Yep. Also, late 90s was when cordless phones really reached a new generation with what was called Giga Range. It went to higher frequencies.
Right.
Because
less interference.
Before that,
right.
Cordless phones operated in what was called the 49 megahertz band, which you could listen to your neighbor's phone.
Right.
Which was funny because I had a walkie-talkie that I'd sometimes forget and leave on, and I'd hear my neighbor's wireless phone through it. It was hilarious. I never tried actually communicating back with her. I don't think it would work, but
I'm sure there were some interesting conversations.
Well, you only hear one part of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, you hear one side of it.
That's what makes it interesting.
They suddenly realize. Now, what's interesting is there's still a law in the books that you cannot buy a scanner radio that covers the 900 megahertz band because that was where cellular phones 20 years ago were operating.
Wireless phones or cellular phones?
Cellulars were operating 20 years ago. And they were analog, so you could eavesdrop. So they passed a law to make it illegal to buy receivers. Well, now it's all digital, so you couldn't listen to it in the first place.
It'd be a bunch of garbage.
And it's on entirely different frequency bands. Nobody uses 900 megahertz for a cell phone anymore.
Yeah, well, sometimes it takes a while for law to catch up to reality these days.
Indeed. let's see here. A couple of more. Now, they talk about the Nintendo 64. But one of the big products, of course, was Windows 95.
Which
I'm pretty sure came out in 95, not 97.
But it was still selling big
in
97. And Windows 95 really changed.
It took a little while to catch on, as I recall.
Right. Well, the interface, the basic interface, is what Windows is, that introduced the current interface with the whole start bar, the task bar, the everything else, because it was quite a departure from 3.1.
Absolutely.
Which was quite a departure from DOS. But yeah, it introduced pretty much what modern Windows is. Everything else is just around the edges.
I remember being at a demonstration and this person had Windows 97. The rest of us were stuck with Windows 95. Or was it Windows
97?
There was a 97.
It was kind of a step between Windows 95 and the Millennium Edition. No, Windows 98. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was like,
Shows what I know. Anyway, they had 98. We were stuck with 95. This person had a more modern computer. And so he starts opening up all these windows. Well, if you did that in 95, it'd crash it. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have very many windows open in 95. But 98 was like, you know, open 6, 8, 10 of them. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Well, 98 was based on what was called the NT platform, which was their professional, which is what, you know, professional operating systems operated on. Because you had Windows NT that was meant for the server people.
That was fancy.
Yeah, that was fancy.
So this person has like 6 windows open and he goes to open another one. I said, yeah, sure, open another window. One, you're showing off, and two, you know, why doesn't it crash? Because if you did that with Windows 95, it would. It would lock up. So you had to make sure you didn't have too many windows open in 95. Nowadays, you could have 16 of them, and it doesn't matter.
Nintendo 64 was the first 64-bit home video game. And that was, of course, direct competition to the Sony PlayStation.
You notice how much of the stuff is gaming, entertainment, blah, blah.
Well, that's what a lot of, technology is.
Now, Alan, did you play Star Fox?
It's my favorite game ever.
Star Careful Fox how you 64. Say that.
Hmm?
Careful how you say that.
Star Fox.
Star Fox 64. The graphics
I was
are,
being sarcastic.
Yeah. Oh, dear. At this point in time, the latter part of the 1990s, I was installing home theaters. And we were just making the transition from laser discs to this newfangled thing called a DVD.
Uh-huh.
And there was even, for a brief time, something called a DivX, which was a one-shot DVD because the licensing was all over the place because the movie studios were saying, you know, we don't want this very durable viewing thing where we can't get continuing money off of it. So DVDs were very, very expensive. The players were pretty darned expensive.
$500, it says over there.
Yeah. When digital video disc products arrived in the United States, most Hollywood studios weren't on board with the format. You had to make do with a couple of other oddball titles. And we have hit the end of the show.
You're pretty close.
Also, late 90s was when MP3s really made a difference, because before that, your audio files were either in some weird format or they were WAV file, which was enormous.
Huge.
Uncompressed. Enormous. It sounded good, but man, they took up lots of space.
Oh, yeah.
Still do.
Yep. And I think that's just we timed that out just right. So a little bit of retro tech here. Of course, if you want to contact us, boomertechradio@gmail.com is the address to write to. Check in on boomertechradio.com.
and give us some show ideas, stories that you would like to see us covered, download the podcast.
We never hear from anybody, so please, yeah, let us know you're out there.
Let us know we have listeners out there. It makes our day. It's Bob and Brenda and Alan say, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other.
It takes you to your place of work. It gets your kids to school, practice, recitals, and to visit friends and relatives. It takes you on your adventures, and it brings you home again safely. It's your car or light truck, and for most of us, it's our second biggest investment. So when your vehicle needs routine maintenance or major repairs, it just makes sense to go with the very best. Here in Shasta County, that means one thing: Advanced Automotive. Advanced Automotive is Redding's only shop that's listed on RepairPal.com, part of a nationwide network of shops that are regularly evaluated for superior training, guaranteed fair prices, and excellent customer reviews. And Advanced Automotive backs up their work with something you won't get anywhere else, a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty. Don't just take my word for it. Log on to RepairPal.com, enter your make, model, and zip code, and read what your friends and neighbors have to say. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Redding, 244-4423.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. One person's dead, 19 others injured after a car plows into a crowd of people during a protest in Charlottesville, Virginia this afternoon. There are reports the driver of that vehicle is now in custody. The accident happened at the back end of a day of violent and ugly protest between white nationalists and anti-fascists as they mixed it up for the second day. Several people were injured in the fights. Police and riot gear made several arrests before they broke up the groups. The governor has declared a state of emergency. Speaking this afternoon in Bedminster, New Jersey, President Trump called for restraint.
Above all else, we must remember this truth.